Good morning.
Good morning.
I didn't make my type large enough, so this is going to be interesting. Used to be that was just fine, but I'm so pleased to be with you. Cameron, thank you so much for inviting me. I know Cameron from UCC circles, and we went to the same divinity school. Not at the same time, but I'm so pleased to work with Cameron and do the larger work of the church in the world together. We try to collaborate for good in the world. Anyway, I'm so pleased to be with you. Thank you for welcoming me here. And also, it's really cool because my son lives in Raleigh and he came this morning, so I'm really glad. Given the day and time in which we live, I'd like to think with you, really worry with you this morning for a few minutes about privileges delusion. What a year this has been. Okay, not just a year. What a bunch of years it has been recently. Every day, I hear something that makes me say, I cannot believe I'm hearing that. There cannot be anything more absurd than what I'm hearing today. And then the next day, the same thing happens. Something more absurd. It's happening all the time. And I'm cognizant that I'm not just observing the absurdity. I recognize that we are part of an unfolding story. We are part of this unfolding absurd story. So I remember a tale from my childhood. Maybe you remember it too. It's about the emperor and his new clothes. Do you know the story I'm talking about? The emperor was naked, and everyone was pretending they didn't see it. And finally, a young child speaks up and says, "But he has no clothes." I don't want to talk up today about the sneaky tailors who made the whole charade. Don't want to talk about the elaborate weaving of non-fabric. Don't want to talk about the king strutting around, although all those things are connected. What I want us to think about today are the people. Every single person saw that the emperor was naked, and yet they all pretended he wasn't naked. They lived their lives based on a constructed narrative that the emperor was wearing lovely, brilliant clothes. Why did they do that? Maybe each one thought they were the only one who could see the nakedness. Maybe each one thought they would be singled out, thought of as stupid, that they would be shamed or ostracized if they didn't go along with the normative narrative. And it's not just about naming that the emperor had no clothes, that the emperor was naked. It's also that they lived their lives in that constructed system. So I want to plant a seed today that our lives are all intertwined in the constructed narratives about a naked emperor. And I'm not just talking about the constructive narrative that we see every day that other people live in. I'm also talking about our own constructed narratives. Oh, and that the constructive narrative was about money. Okay, with that in mind, let's take a look at our biblical story. You heard it a few minutes ago. God, Nathan, and David. We all know David's story. David, the overlooked son of Jesse. David, the one chosen by God even when he was ignored by others, even his family. Chosen because God looked not on the outward appearance, but on the heart. What a trajectory David had. Charisma, success, husband of seven wives. Biblical marriage for you. That's supposed to be funny. Material gains beyond anything thought possible. Power, influence, excitement. What a trajectory. And somewhere along the way, something happened to the one who had been an overlooked herder of sheep. David became something different. David constructed his own story in his own head, and the world around him allowed that to happen. David constructed his own narrative, and in doing so, he forgot who he was and where he came from. He told himself, and then he believed a new story about himself. He earned everything he had. It was his accomplishment, his pulling himself up by his own bootstraps that got him all his success and material gain and all those women and wives. He was special and unique. He was entitled. He was different than everyone else, a cut above. Therefore, different rules applied to him. And so this man, the one after God's own heart, became a man with a cold, narcissistic heart. He became more self-satisfied, rude, arrogant, less sensitive, less empathetic, more and more aggressively demonstrative about his success, less attuned to the factors surrounding the circumstances of his life, more selfish, more manipulative, more insular, separated from other human beings and creation. Things changed in his mind and heart so that he could make sense of his advantages and privileges. He created a false consciousness about himself and the world around him, and it's very easy for us to see other people in our world doing that, but how about looking at ourselves? There's some research, it was published a few years ago from the University of California about the game of Monopoly. Do you know the game of Monopoly? Researchers at UC Berkeley were interested in the effects of wealth. They did a study of over 200 subjects. They'd pick a random pair and put them in a room with the game of Monopoly. Again, by random choice, one person they'd pick would be the rich person, and the other person would be the poor person in the study. The rich person received twice the starting money, just because they were the rich person. The rich person also gets double the salary when pass and go. The rich person gets to roll two dice, while the poor person gets to roll only one. Each of the 100 pairs in the study played for 15 minutes while they were recorded by video. The results were consistent. Look it up. In the beginning, the pair would show puzzlement and look at each other like, what's going on? This is weird. But as the game went on, the rich person started acting physically more dominant, pounding the piece as they went around the board, raising their arms at monetary success. The rich person invariably started talking about how they had earned their success. The rich person's narrative increasingly demonstrated a newly constructed narrative, one that pointed out personal merit and achievement while ignoring the facts that were inconsistent with that new narrative. The conclusion of the study: as privilege increases, compassion and empathy decrease, while a sense of entitlement and notions of favor become rampant. A moral code is invented to justify the privilege. And we see that in our society today. Something about privilege has the tendency to cause people to forget where they came from and who they used to be. In our society, the way privilege functions dehumanizes everyone. Privilege dehumanizes the people without privilege, and privilege dehumanizes those who have privilege from seeing themselves as human. So, David, I'll let us talk about David because it's easier than talking about ourselves. David fell victim to his privilege. He forgot that he was intertwined with everyone else, or at least he distorted the interconnectedness to elevate his position and privilege at the expense of others. He went from humble beginnings to then believing that it was okay for him to be abusive through his privilege. From being a ragtag bandit to being a king who took whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted. To be a country of people fleeing religious persecution, to then rise to the point where when you're fleeing tyranny and seeking religious freedom, you believe that religious freedom gave you the birthright to own another human being. Amazing how a motley crew of misfits, dismissed by the British Empire, found a way to establish their own power and privilege in the midst of their insecurity by stealing land from other human beings, stealing it from brown bodies, and building a society on the backs of owning black bodies. Privilege corrupts. David got to a place where his privilege so infected his spirit that he thought he could do whatever he wanted. It gave him a free ticket to be abusive. He did not care about Uriah. He didn't really care about Bathsheba. He wanted to possess her. He didn't care about anyone or anything else. All he knew was he wanted what he wanted. His actions displayed his desire to dismiss what was right in the name of privilege. So when it came to the point where David had killed Uriah, he was so intoxicated with his privilege that having a rational conversation with him was not possible. So God had to reach him by way of a story through Nathan. As we look at the story, we see how the story worked on David's privilege-fogged mind. Nathan came to David and said, "Hey, there's this man in your kingdom, and he did such and such and such and such." And it played to David's arrogance. David said, "Who did that? I'm the king. I can right this wrong. Tell me, who's the culprit? Because that person should die today. Nathan, tell me, who is it? Don't be afraid to point him out. I'm the king. I'm with all the power and privilege. I can make all things new. I can make things right because my privilege tells me I can correct the world." And in the midst of all that arrogance and blustering, Nathan said, "David, you are that man." Recognizing that I'm not just observing what is going on all around me, but that I am part of an unfolding story in our world means that I need to live in new ways. Seeing myself in my privilege, seeing ourselves in our privileges, and make no mistake, every person in here has some privileges, calls us to live in new ways. Seeing in new ways requires being in new ways. I read your strategic plan, United Church of Chapel Hill. I like it a lot. I am particularly struck by one of your core values, moral courage to do. If we are going to turn this around, if we are going to bring social change on all the issues our world is facing, we need to have the moral courage to do. We have to recognize that our lives are inextricably bound, and we have to cultivate and embody the moral courage to do. So I invite us today, you individually, us collectively, you as the United Church of Chapel Hill, to have the moral courage to do, to live into a new prayer, and that is a prayer of action. Do the hard work of recognizing your own privilege and live fully into our interconnectedness. In the past, I would have invited us to be allies, but I've grown a little around the concept of allies, and allies can step in when it's for their own self-interest, but then step out when they don't feel like it. So being an ally is not quite enough for me. I want to invite us to be collaborators. White people, let's be collaborators around racial justice. Straight people, let's be collaborators around human expression. Christians, let's be collaborators around issues of Christian privilege. Let's be collaborators around every issue of privilege. Men, be collaborators. People of means, be collaborators. From every point of privilege, be collaborators. Let us, as part of an unfolding journey, be the change that we want to see in the world.